This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi,
my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Marcus Allen from Cult Wines. How are you, Marcus?
I'm fine, thanks, mate. Yep, fine.
Excellent, excellent. You're the director of the EMEA, which is European, Middle Eastern, Asia.
Africa. Yeah. Africa. Europe, Middle East and Africa. Yeah, we've got offices in Hong Kong and Singapore and they cover Asia. So our team covers Africa.
Africa as well. Okay.
So I'm basically director of EMEA. So I run the relationship management team. The relationship managers cover all of our clients in those regions, Europe, Middle East and Africa.
Okay. And historically, you've been with Cult Wines for a while now.
Yep. Joined in 2014, end of 2014. So yeah, a long old time now.
Okay, that's fair. But in fact, I interviewed Tom Gehring, who's the owner or one of the founders, back in 2012. So only a couple of years after we spoke to him last. So this is going to be a bit of a catch up on Cult Wines because Cult Wines have been in the. Well, do you want to describe what your business is?
Yeah, of course. So we're a fine wine asset manager, as it were. So we look after roughly £300 million worth of physical fine wine. On behalf of clients in around 80 countries worldwide. We're there in as an investment company. We're there to make money for our clients. So as I said earlier, we have offices in London, Hong Kong, Singapore, Shanghai, New York and Toronto, opening up in Dubai also. And what we do, we're not a fund. So clients don't just pool their assets together and, you know, buy one big group of wines. We build individual portfolios of physical fine wines for individual investors based on their risk appetite, target returns, time scales, investment levels, etc. So they're kind of like, I suppose you could say, personalized, bespoke investment collections for every single client or a bunch of clients. And we've done that, as you said, since really the end of 2008 on to where we are today.
Tom, when I interviewed Tom, the business has been going for about 15 years, but Tom said originally it was doing nothing for a few years before it really kicked off.
Yeah, so I mean, the background, Tom's father, Philip, was a successful banker in the 80s and 90s, but his passion was wine, so he loved heading out to the wine regions, in particular Burgundy and Bordeaux and the like, and collecting wines and taking his kids along for the ride. And Thomas and Oliver grew up around that. So when they left university, they wanted to get into the industry, but I suppose, you know, they wanted to get into something a little bit more interesting, fun, diverse, and I suppose financial than just being a broker or a merchant or a wholesaler or something. So they identified fine wine investment as quite an underserved area. There wasn't really many companies or any companies at the time that were doing this, investing in wine on behalf of other people. You know, you had to have your own connections and you need to know where you're buying from and know what was going on. It was pretty much a closed off industry, and we wanted to democratize fine wine investment, is the way that we say it. So we opened up doing that, and it was Thomas and his brother Oliver to start with, and then Philip came on shortly after as our chairman, and they've grown the business ever since. And as you said, I came on in 2014.
Yeah, and the business has grown quite a lot. I spoke to Tom back in 2012. He said the turnover of the business back then, what do you think it was?
2012?
Yeah.
3 million?
Yeah, you're pretty good actually. 3.6 million really? Is what he said. And do you know what the turnover is now?
60 odd million?
That's pretty good. It is 58 million now. So in 10 years, you've gone from 3.6 to 58 million. That's a big jump, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we've
done really well. You know your numbers.
I should do. So we... So the business has grown massively. I mean, when I joined in 2014, you know, we had, I think, 7 or 8 million under management, maybe less than 10 employees. You know, I was nine or ten or something like that. And now we've got nearly 100 people worldwide, nearly 300 million under management. And we really want to get to 1 billion under management. That's our sort of grand, big, fat number that we're looking towards in the next sort of five to 10 years. And that's the target. And we certainly feel that's achievable in this market. So, onwards and upwards.
Cool. Now tell me, you said you're a fine wine investment company. How does that differ from, say, a traditional broker or something like that?
So a broker, merchant, wholesaler, at the end of the day, their job is to sell as much wine of any quality as possible, right? They're just looking at the bottom line. How much wine do they sell and what's their margin, which is a great business. You know, they're effectively, as the UK kind of is, you know, it's a just getting something from somewhere and selling it on. That's their business. Whereas what we're trying to do is build portfolios that are going to increase in value. So a merchant would be looking around, you know, a massive amount of wines that they may be just buying and looking at a price that they can sell them at. Whereas we're looking at it from a very different perspective. We're looking at wines on the basis of which wines are going to appreciate in value. And therefore we buy those wines to hold and to sell into the future for our clients.
There's quite a small pool of investable wines, so there must be quite a big overlap. You know, like there's wines you drink, and then there's wines you invest in, yeah. hopefully drink maybe, or someone drinks.
Well, you say that, but really, if you look at the values of wines, you know, that we would say a case of wine, the minimum case price that we maybe would look at would be around £400-£500, and the top end you're talking £100,000. So in between that, you've got quite a wide scope, and of course it depends on the risk profile of the client. You're not going to get 95% of your portfolio is not going to be in that kind of low chip type of asset, but there are quite a few wines that we would be able to look at. I mean, if you said that of all of the world's wines, maybe 1% of those wines would be classified as investment grade or fine wine, however you want to determine that, and then we as a company would maybe look at, you know, we wouldn't buy everything that we possibly could. You'd maybe buy 10% of those wines. So you're talking, you know, Bordeaux, Burgundy, Napa, you know, of course, places like Champagne, Italy, Rhone, and then the New World, places like Australia, Chile, Argentina. You know, you can build a pretty diversified portfolio of wines from those regions.
Yeah. How long do you think people should hold these wines for?
So with us as a firm, there's no lockup period. So it's not like some sort of financial product where you're fixed in for a certain amount of time. So technically anyone could sell whenever they want. That being said, you know, the absolute minimum time that anyone should even consider wine is 3 to 5 years. You know, 7 to 10 years is a much better way of looking at it, because at the end of the day, what you're buying into is a supply and demand imbalance. So the world's greatest wine producing regions, you know, the way that the terroir works, you can only produce a certain amount of wine in those areas. And then the way that in the old world, at least, the regulations work is you can only produce a certain amount of hectolitres of wine per hectare of land. So geographically and legally, you're fixed. So we know roughly how much you can create in any given year. And then, of course, the one crazy thing about wine as an investment is the only thing you can guarantee is that there's going to be less available next year. Of the 2015 Margaux, 2016 Senia, whatever it is, next year there will be less because people are simply consuming it. And that's what drives the price up.
Okay, supply and demand. Although you do get new product coming into the market, and the wine does need to be of a quality or a style that will age.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that's why you're looking at investment grade wine, investment grade producers. And that's one of the reasons why people, you know, a lot of the time, if you talk about, oh, we're in wine investment and somebody likes their wines and they know a little bit about wine, they'll kind of start throwing wines at you that they like and say, oh, have you ever invested in this wine? Or would you invest into this wine? And what do you think about this wine? And the answer is, you know, maybe, quite possibly. But a lot of the time they'll use examples like South Africa, right? South Africa produced tons of fantastic wine, very, very good value. But the secondary market isn't very liquid. There's not much trading activity. There's not much price appreciation in that market. So if you were to go and say, I think South Africa's great wine, I think it's really good value, I'm going to buy it. Well, that's just a massive punt because you've got no evidence backing that up. Whereas if you look at, you know, Bordeaux, we've got, you know, 50 years worth of trading history, liquid markets, transactions, then that's more of an investable asset. Just by looking at the data, you can analyze it and say, yeah, we're going to buy that because of X, Y, Z, rather than just say, we're going to buy that because it tastes great and surely people are going to buy it more in the future.
Like you buy the product yourself and then you repackage it into sections for people to purchase as an investment?
No. So basically we have a stock position of around 7 million that's kind of pretty consistent. So we have an investment committee that sits monthly with members of our investment management team and other key teams that want to analyze the macro factors of what's going on in the market and analyze micro factors in different regions. And we'll say, right, we want to, you know, be buying more in Italy, more in Champagne at the moment, or wherever it may be. So on that basis, they'll work with the buyers to actually build the position in that area. And we'll have wines effectively in that, you know, stockpile that have been vetted by the investment committee that we think are good investments. So then when, you know, new client, Mr. or Mrs. Johnson, come along and say, I want to invest £250,000 of cult wines, I'm medium risk, I'm long term, I want to see 12% a year, build me a portfolio, we'll look at the stock position and identify wines from that position using our algorithms and data and technology, and we'll build a portfolio, and then we'll double check that, we'll use our manpower, say, right, is that the right portfolio for that person? And then effectively that wine will be transferred over to their name and ownership in bonds. So we manage the whole process for them end to end. So just like if they go to a wealth manager and say, I want to invest £1 million, here you go. The wealth manager takes that money and does everything else, you know, annual reviews, updates, access to whatever they need. And then when the person says, I want to sell my investment and get my cash back, thank you very much, they'll do all that for them and process it for the client. So it's exactly the same as us, just that the asset class itself is fine wine. of course, when people are coming along and, you know, maybe they've got a larger portfolio size, or we're looking for wines that maybe we don't have in our stock position, then that's what our job is, really, to identify those wines in the market and go out and access them for the client.
And the key thing there is that the client owns the wine. Once they pay you, you transfer ownership to them, and that's registered in the bonded warehouse?
Yeah, absolutely. So the really, really important thing for investors in this asset class, exactly as you mentioned, is that the asset is owned by the individual investor. So Mr. Smith, as we said before, purchases those wines, and effectively it's a transaction, and immediately those wines are transferred into their name, ownership control. And that's the question that we often get asked is, oh, well, can we drink it? And the answer is, well, yes, ultimately they are the owner. If they said to us, I want to consume the wine, then they pay the duty and VAT to take the wine out of bond, because obviously the wine is sitting in a government bonded warehouse, which is a tax-free zone. They pay the duty and VAT and any delivery fees, and they can have that wine and consume it. So, you know, maybe 5 or 10% of our clients would sometimes take delivery of some of their wines, but we would typically stipulate, you know, listen, let's invest in these wines to make you money, and then obviously if you want to buy wines for consuming, we can do that. They're often different things, but yeah, the client owns the asset, which is super important for us.
Okay, and how do you make your money? What's your skin in the game? Do you make a margin when you sell the wine to the client?
No, it's an annual management fee. So the model is very akin to investment management, where basically you get paid a percentage of the net asset value of the asset per year. So our fees go down depending on the level of investment, as the level of investment goes up. So our fees range from 2.75% down to 2% per annum, and that covers everything. So that's purchasing the wine at investment market prices, so effectively buying access. That's management of the portfolio, and of course building the bespoke portfolio in the beginning. That's storage, that's insurance, and then that includes brokerage as well. So that includes all sales at the end. And, you know, that's really important, because if someone wants to go and do this themselves, which many people enjoy doing, and that's absolutely fine, they've got to be aware that, one, it's pretty hard to get access at the pricing we get access at. Two, they've got to pay for storage insurance, which can cost anywhere from 0.5 to 2% a year, depending on the amount that they buy and hold. And then they've got to pay brokerage. And at the end, that's usually around 10%. And if you go to an auction, you've got to pay a hammer price of 15%. So let's say you put in £100,000, and in a few years' time, it's worth £200,000. You've got to give someone, you know, 10% of that £200,000, £20,000 to sell the wines, which is actually an incredibly expensive way of doing it. So with us, it's simply 2% of the net asset value annually, and exclusive of all of that. And we don't take any performance fees. So our incentive to effectively perform or to grow the portfolio, to make money for the client, is that as the value, the net asset value of that portfolio increases over time, the 2% that we take will increase with it.
Okay. And that's mark to market, is it?
Yeah, that's LiveX market price.
LiveX market price. Okay. And you've got different levels of you've got Cru Class A, Premier Cru Class A, Grand Cru Class A, and Cult Cru, and they've got different levels of investment. Is that like a Cru Class A is £10,000? Is that a one-off investment, or is it £10,000 per year?
So Cru Class A is £10,000. That's our cheapest level of investment, and that's actually an auto-managed account. So we set that up last year for investors that wanted to get in at less than 25,000, which is the minimum investment for a bespoke portfolio. So that's not bespoke, it's not made to measure, that's made by the algorithms, and that's a one-off payment. And of course they can top up that whenever they want. There's no minimum level of top up. So when someone is a client of Cult Wines, they can send us £500 a month, they can send us 10 grand a year, they can do whatever they want based on whenever they want to invest with us. £25,000 is Premier Cru, 100,000, 500,000, and a million.
And those other ones, they're just you've just got to have £35,000 of investment with you guys. So it's not an ongoing investment.
No. It's just that's the level at which you're a Premier Cru investor. When you get to £100,000, you're a Grand Cru investor. When you get to £500,000, you're a Cult Cru investor, and so on.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. And the last thing is, who are your competitors?
So it's an interesting one. Depends on how you look at it. So we've got, you know, a fair number of competitors. If you look at people that are selling the same product as us, you know, you can talk about Berry Brothers, Bordeaux Index, Fine and Rare, Giustarini's, you know, all the major merchants. They're selling a lot of the time a lot of the same stuff as us, but they're selling it a different way. They're selling it for consumption. They're not necessarily selling it for, you know, to make money for their clients. So they're pretty vintage agnostic. They don't care. Just sell as much of this stuff as we can. Whereas we're only specifying the vintages that we feel are going to make money for our clients. We charge obviously very differently. Ours is an annual management fee. Theirs is a spread and a margin up front and then a sales fee. In terms of the investment space, there are a few other kind of competitors that have started over the last few years. There's a couple in the US, one called Vinvest, one called Vint. And they do, you know, pretty much a very, very similar sort of thing to us. And as fine wine and as other alternatives have become more popular in investors' portfolios, then evidently you're going to have more companies set up to do what we do. But it's great. You know, we welcome the competition. And I think what they are doing is widening the scope of the amount of people that access the market. I mean, they've all got great marketing budgets to go and market fine wine investment. And a lot of the time people end up doing their own research and finding that we've been around a little bit longer, which is quite useful for us.
Some of these guys have fractional ownerships, but yep. Like almost like a unit trust where you're buying a section of that. The problem with that is you don't necessarily own the wine, which is always a bit of a problem.
Yep. So that's why we've looked into all of these methods, of course. And the way that we do it, client owns the underlying asset, right? That keeps it simple. They own a physical asset under their name, ownership control. They can consume the wine. The tax benefits, especially in the UK where it's capital gains tax exempt, you know, that comes along when you own the physical asset. You know, if you own a unit of something or if you own a share of something, the rules are a little bit different, a little bit more of a gray area. So that's one of the reasons why we keep it as it is. But we do work with a lot of fractional ownership companies. We, you know, the wealth tech, as they're called, platforms have been setting up over the last couple of years. You know, they've literally gone from, you know, a couple to hundreds all over the world. And we're working with a lot of them. And what they're trying to do is effectively tap into this demand for alternatives by the masses. So they will come to us and say, right, you know, you build a portfolio for £5 million, for example. And we will then allow our investors on our platform to buy a $100 share or unit of that portfolio. So for us, it's very good business because we have effectively one client and that's a large client and we just transact with them and then they deal with the ledger of smaller clients off the back of that. So we found rather than actually allow or do fractionalized ownership on our own platform, what we'd rather do is allow all these specialist fractionalization companies to do that and they come to us and they buy a portfolio and we manage that as one client.
Okay then, Marcus, I think what we'll do is we'll wrap it up there. Next week I want to talk a wee bit about the current investment market. You know, we're in high inflation, all this type of stuff. Is it a good time to invest in wine and all that type of thing? Okay.
Yeah, of course.